Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Josh Norris, another of our Baseball America prospect deep dives. Today, we are talking all about the San Francisco Giants, an organization that has had a very busy, a very impactful offseason. Obviously made a change at the top. Buster Posey, one of the all-time Giants greats, is now running the organization, not that many years after he was running the pitching staff from behind home plate. This is a team that is, you know, has had some pretty high highs, especially in the 21st century, but even in the last few years, and also is one that right now is kind of trying to catch up in a division that is extremely challenging. But Josh, I would say that it's fair to say that when we look at this farm system right now, there is a truly elite number one prospect. And then the depth behind that, especially on the hitting side, there's some work to be done. But we will dive in, good to see you, Josh, by talking about a very fun prospect to talk about, which is first baseman Bryce Eldridge, who basically flew through the minors last year, I think is a fair way to say it. He started the year at low A, made it to high A, then to double A, and finished the year with a cameo. I mean, he had 9 games at double A, 8 games at triple A. I don't want to make it sound like this is a player who played 30 games at 4 different levels, but there aren't many players who you see who play at 4 different full season minor league levels in one season. And that kind of puts us on a timetable that Bryce Eldridge is not that far away at this point, is he?
I don't think so, but I'm very interested to see where they assign him to start the year. Because like you said, it was a cameo at AAA, and it was a cameo at AAA because the AA season was finished, and they wanted him to continue playing games. And then they sent him to the Fall League, too, for a couple weeks. I wouldn't be totally surprised if they sent him back to double A, because obviously he didn't master that level in 9 games, you know, 2 series.
All that he needs to see, Josh, like, I mean, that 9 games.
Yeah, absolutely. He ate all the ZZQ he wanted in Richmond. But if they send him back there, it's, you know, get him some more tests against more advanced pitching. And, you know, I happen to see maybe the series of his life. And Eugene, I think he hit 5 home runs in a span of 72 hours, 60 hours, something like that. And they were not cheapies either. Granted, Eugene is not the most difficult place in the world to hit, although there's no place in the world where it's the most difficult place in the world to hit when you've got 80 grade raw power and 70 grade in-game power. He can lose baseballs pretty easily. And he did over and over and over again, just a flick of his wrists and they were gone to dead center field. The caveat here is he is 6'7" tall, and that leaves a lot of spaces for pitchers to attack. I'd say the one guy who had success against him in that series was Ty Cummings. Shocker, the Rays traded for him. He's an interesting young arm, and he kind of screwed Bryce Eldridge into the ground for that first game of the series. If guys locate, they are going to do well against him. He's going to have a lot of strike zone to cover, but even if he doesn't, even if he's not, you know, the guy you saw in the lower levels of the minor leagues, he'll still have the power to be a cornerstone in the middle of a lineup, I think. Defense needs to get a little bit better at first base from evaluators inside and outside the organization. But it's a really good prospect. And you know, might not be like, I wouldn't expect him to be in San Francisco in May or anything, but he could get there at some point this year, especially depending on how the Giants do.
It is notable to me that when talking, again, we are recording this, it is very early in spring training, but they're already talking about, hey, Lamont Wade's probably going to play some outfield. Well, that kind of tells me to some extent what they're kind of thinking here, which is, you know, again, never hurts to add a little versatility. Lamont Wade's played a lot of outfield over his career going back to college, but does tell me at some point this year, it's not crazy to think that if everything goes right, that Bryce Eldridge could arrive. I would say with that, though, kind of what you said there, I do think that this is a prospect who, when he does arrive, there's a reason to have some patience. Because, for one, he will play this season as a 20-year-old, mm-hmm. like the entirety of the season. So if he makes it to the majors at any point this year, it'll make him one, not just one of the youngest players in the big leagues this year, but one of the youngest players we've seen in the big leagues in the 21st century. Because 20-year-olds don't get there very often. And the second part that you just hit on is he's 6'7". So the power is probably going to be prevalent. Like, you're hoping that the hit tool, which is could be pretty good, shown some aptitude already, as you said. But if you told me that the power is there and then the hit tool arrives later, that wouldn't seem crazy to me because, again, there are going to be ways to attack him, approach him. This is a really interesting prospect. I mean, when Bryce Eldridge was in high school, the general thought was that this was going to be a 6'7" fireballing pitcher. This was a guy who had a premium fastball, and it really wasn't, I would say, until USA Baseball 18U, where he just kept making baseballs disappear, that it's like, maybe this guy is a position player. And here you are, like, not only is he a position player, but he's one of the fastest moving position players from that 2023 draft class. The power, I mean, let me just ask it this way. Like, how exceptional could the power be in the long term if it all breaks right here?
40 plus home runs.
That's
a lot of home runs. The one that I said about all the ones I saw on Eugene, but the one that really sticks out was the last day of my spring training trip last year. It was windy and it was blowing in at Papago Park, and he hit it oppo out. And it was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. Because my first look at him came the prior year at Instructs, and he looked atrocious. Like, it was just swing and miss over changeups and curveballs and through fastballs. Oh, no. Things changed. Apparently, when you get done with the high school season and a draft season and then are in pro ball, you get tired, even at 18 years old.
And the thing I would say with that is that kind of gives him a chance to be the power hitter that the Giants have lacked for a long, long time.
Right. I mean, well, it'll be interesting. Like I said, if they send him back to Richmond is no pitcher's park. But I have no doubt that he could hit tape measure shots there, or he will probably put plenty of baseballs into the cove one day. I'm sure you're going to get extra boats out there waiting for him. Like, he's got that kind of juice. It's just easy with him. The power is very, very, very real.
So he played some outfield in 23. Last year, he focused on first base. That's his position long-term. He's a big target over there. But he's still got some real work to do there, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 20 years old. Ain't many first basemen or any player finished product at 20 years old. He's got to get a little more rangy. He's got to do better on scoops, all sorts of things. You know, that's kind of the book on him. And that's a little bit what he was working on in the fall league. And before they realized he really realized he was pretty tired. And they tell the one story that I realized where he was really tired in the fall league. He's standing out there at first base. Guy breaks his bat and it goes down to first base and he just lets it hit him. And it's like, okay, I'm 6'7". You're no match.
It won't hurt me. Don't worry.
He's just kind of like, he just stood there and let it took it.
I am an oak.
Yeah. I mean, with him too. I just want to tell this story too from Eugene. I'm watching him up the line and I hear a fan behind me go, that first baseman, what's he, about 6 foot? Excuse me? Okay. So I'll give you the number for LensCrafter. That gentleman is 6'7". Okay.
Yeah. And again, like, as we should note, like, this is a player who has not focused on first base for very long. So it's not all that surprising that he's not a fully finished product there. He is, I would say, Josh, I'll put it this way. You did a number of teams this year. You do a number of teams every year. Was this one of the easiest who's number ones that you've had in your time at BA?
I mean, I haven't had a difficult one in a while. Actually, that's not true. The Rangers was difficult this year. Painter was pretty difficult. Painter was easy for the Phillies. Jason Dominguez was easy for the Yankees. Who are the other team I have? Rangers. I forget who else I even have at this point. But yes, it was very easy.
That's because there is a big gap after this. That is our lone top 100 prospect in this organization. Number two prospect is one who we already have news on in spring training, which is Marco Luciano. The Giants have announced that he's going to focus on the outfield. That's kind of a, going back and reading through our reports, right? He's been a shortstop for a long time. And every shortstop report was like, he's got a lot of work to do.
Stay short. To put it differently, he's been playing shortstop for a long time. He hasn't been a shortstop in a while.
And I would say, like, if you had it to do over again, if you're the Giants, last year is the year where his defensive limitations really limited him. Not that he set the world on fire at the plate either, but it does feel like that last year they kind of came to the point where they decided he was not playable at the positions that he was set to play in the big league level. And so he wasn't going to play. Is that kind of a fair summation of, like, what do you do when you've got this prospect who's been a premium prospect for them for years, but basically was determined to kind of be unplayable at the positions that when he arrived in the big leagues, like, what can he play? He can play short and he can play third. We don't feel he can play short or third. Well, what can you do now? Well, it's going to be really hard to get him in the lineup then because we don't feel like he can play the positions that we're asking him to play. How do we get to this point? And does the move to the outfield kind of hopefully give a new kind of opening a new opportunity here?
I would say that's kind of what you're hoping for, is that moving to the outfield makes life a little easier on him defensively. Not that the outfield is easy, but it's, you know, not shortstop. And by doing so, you take some pressure off his mind, and it opens up the bat. Because I don't think anybody says he's not talented with the bat. Like, he was okay again at AAA this year. It wasn't great. But 760 ops.
Not great for the PCL.
But if you can free up a guy by taking some defensive pressure off him and let that bat work, then, you know, maybe you'll be able to reclaim some value. They've been good at getting post-hype prospect value out of guys. Like, Elliot Ramos finally arrived last year. And it seems like he should have been, like, AARP card ready, but he wasn't that old. He was a younger guy for his draft class. I think he was, what, 25 last year, 24? Tyler Fitzgerald, same idea. Like, they got a lot of value out of him.
I'll say this with Luciano. I feel like if you asked a pop quiz to, like, really astute fans and said, how old do you think Marco Luciano will be playing the 2025 season? I would take the under. That I would say that almost everyone guessing would overshoot it, because this is a player who will still be 24 for almost the entirety. Yeah. In September of 25, he will turn 25. Turn 24. He's a 23-year-old. I'm sorry, I screwed that up. He will turn 24 during the season.
Correct.
It feels like he might be 27 or 28. Because this is the guy who's been a top 10 prospect in this organization since the 2019 season.
Right. I mean, like, he's younger than Carson Wisenhunt, the number three prospect, you know, who's been in the Giant system far less long. He's not younger than James Tibbs. But,
you know, thankfully for James Tibbs.
Yes. It seems like he's been around a while. And that happens with these 16-year-olds that come out of, you know, Latin America. Okay, they start their career when they're 16. 7 years later, they're 23. I'm not a great at math, but I think that's how it works.
But what I would say about him is there's always been power. Mm-hmm. The thing that is concerning, beyond the defensive questions, which are real and spectacular, the other question we have here is he's never been a particularly polished hitter. And the hope, like, again, this is kind of these are all projections, right? We're trying to forecast the future. I would say with someone like Luciano, when he was 19, and you say, oh, he needs to improve his pitch recognition, make more contact, but the power, it's exceptional. Then when he's 20, and you're saying the same thing, and then he's 21, at some point, you get less confident about the ability to make that adjustment when it's the same. Like, if you took a Marco Luciano scouting report from this one, from our prospect handbook, and you compared it to what we were writing in 2020, it's a lot of the same things.
Yeah. And he's also dealt with some injuries in there and at points moved relatively quickly. I mean, this is a guy who played in the New York Penn League, which hasn't existed for some time now.
Five seasons. Like, yeah. 2019, last season in the New York Penn League.
Yeah, it's just been a slower burn with him, and that's okay.
I don't know about okay. It's been a slower burn, but the time is starting to run out.
Yeah, I mean, if he, you know, in 2 years he'll be 25, and if he starts to get there at 25, that's fine. Like, it's not what you thought you were going to give him when you gave him all that money, but debuting and establishing yourself at 25 is perfectly fine. You'd rather him do it this year because, like you said, you're in a much more competitive division, and you need every bullet in the chamber you can to go head up with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks.
I will say, like, we're not there yet, but the other problem with these, when you sign as 16 and you're as highly touted as Marco Luciano is, so he was added to the 40-man roster before the 23 season. So he used option in 23, he used an option in 24. Probably use an option in 25. So, like, that's where I say the clock is ticking, is he's going to hit a point where, whether he's ready or not, it's either he's got a big league job or all of a sudden we don't know what we're going to do with him. And that's, I think, where the outfield spot, move to the outfield, is kind of important on that, because it does give him a better shot of establishing himself. And again, they could still, as we just talked about, the Giants could use his power if he can get to it and if he can hit enough and play enough defense to get there. But that's all, you know, again, there's a big difference between one and two on this list. And Josh, as you look at kind of the rest of this top 10 and beyond, you know, this is not a system we have rated particularly highly. Like, if you love the Giants system, I think you could say that there's still a bottom third system probably in that evaluation. And if you don't love the system, you could go, you know, I think we have them 26th, if I remember correctly.
And spoiler alert, it's going to get really bad quickly in the beginning. And I don't say that to be mean. I say that by their number six prospect, Grant McCray, is going to graduate in 7 at-bats. He won't count anymore. If Luciano makes the big league roster, I don't know where he is on options, but if he has 16 more at-bats, he's done. So you're going to, and Mason Black, who's in their top, he's their number, what did I put him at, 8 here, he needs 14 and a third innings. So we could lose top 10 prospects in the first month.
And Bryce Eldridge could graduate before next year in a, you know, if everything goes.
I was right. Just talking about the very immediate future.
Yes. But so there's a lot here to chew on. If you want to chew on it more, go to baseballamerica.com. We have all kind of content, including full scouting reports on all the top 30 Giants prospects and the top 30 prospects for all 30 organizations, with BA grades, tools grades for all 5 tools. And we also wrote up another 10 prospects for each of the 30 organizations, because we can just go to 30. We got that. We got fantasy coverage. We got the RoboScout Top 100. We got the Dynasty Fantasy 500 rankings. We have new draft rankings, include 2026 top high school prospects, 2025 fully updated college and high school, and overall list with scouting reports for the top 200 prospects in the 2025 draft. And by the way, we're not stopping there. We'll be at 500 well before the draft. So all of that at baseballamerica.com. Join the subscribers who are getting the best content that you can get. If you enjoy this, we promise you, you will enjoy everything at baseballamerica.com. We're going to keep diving into this Giants organization and kind of the state of the organization in general right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So, Josh, before we keep talking about the prospects, I want to look a little bigger picture here. We mentioned at the start, Buster Posey is now running the Giants organization. Zach Manasian, who's been in the organization for a while, has been promoted to GM. The way I would describe it is that the Giants are doing a rework. They're trying to upgrade what they do. But they're doing it also like this is not something where they cleaned house and said everyone must go. I think they've much more looked at it and said that they feel like that there were areas that they were falling behind, that they had, and I'm going to tee you up on this one. When it comes to scouting, for example, I would say that they had gotten, smaller in their organization. And you've seen it here that they're looking now, I would say, much more which I would say is a very good approach for any organization, but especially an organization in the NL West who's competing with the Dodgers. They're not saying we want to be best at this or this. They want to be best at everything that they can. And I think there's something notable with that that kind of may fly a little bit under the radar for a lot of fans.
Well, it's kind of a whiplash type of offseason for them in the scouting department, because before, if I have this timeline correct, before Zaidi was let go, he let go a bunch of scouts. And most of them have landed on their feet. But as soon as Posey was hired, one of the hires they made was, and Manasian was elevated, they hired Hadi Rod from the Pirates. And I don't know Hadi well, but I do know that he is well regarded throughout the industry, and I've been familiar with him since before I came to BA. And I immediately kind of rang some alarm bells. It's like, oh, this is a really impactful hire. And they hired him to be the director of pro scouting. And one of the things they did after that was they picked off a lot of guys who had been let go from organizations. Like, there's, if you look in their section of the directory on sale soon, you'll see a lot of guys. And if you're a super nerd, you will see a lot of guys that they picked off from who had been let go by the Marlins, who are now on their pro scouting staff, and from the Cubs, who decided to slash pro scouting. So a lot of those guys landed with the Giants. And it's one of the things I kind of value when you put in together a pro department, is you've got a wide variety of diversity in terms of age and background and experience levels. These are, some of these guys are younger. Some of these guys are older and have been in the game for longer than I've been alive. Some of them played, some of them didn't. One thing I kind of noticed was they hired Justin Pope as a pro scout, who had been a Marlins pitching coach for some time and was a Yankees pitching coach for a while. I knew him as a Trenton Thunder pitching coach back in the day. They hired Donnie Veal, who had been the White Sox pitching coordinator in the minor leagues. So it makes me think, obviously these guys are going to scout hitters too, but I would expect those two gentlemen to have pretty trained eyes when it comes to pitching and what they like. And I wonder if that was almost a conscious decision to say, hey, we want to really know what the state of our pitching in our organization is. And if we're going to make trades, maybe these guys will give us a leg up on finding the best pitching. But I thought it was applaudable that these guys, that the Giants did decide to reverse course and do something that teams are not doing these days and adding to their pro departments. It's been a trend to mostly do this on video or analytically. And I'm not going to say you don't want both those things, but if you can have more ingredients in your souffle, you're going to have a better souffle, said the guy who cannot cook at all.
This is yes and. The cost that you are going to incur to bulk up a scouting department is a rounding error in a major league organization's budget. And especially at a time, again, like the thing I would say here is this is not, oh, they're going to do scouting. They're going to say, who needs analytics? Who needs video and all that? Like you said, this is where you say, we're going to do this and this and this. And if all of it's additive, and I would say with that also, you're looking for every advantage you can, especially when you're competing. If you listen to our Dodgers deep dive, you laid this out pretty well. The Dodgers do it all. The Dodgers want to be the best at R&D, at sports science, at scouting, at video analysis, at coming up with the next great idea and data, in everything. And if you're going to compete against them, and they're, by the way, going to spend more money to you than you on the major league team, you have to be trying to be top tier in as many different things you can. And that's kind of something notable. It'd be worth watching what that means for the Giants going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of a major league scouting department of a decent size is not much compared to, like, you know, a 1 year flyer on a big leaguer, maybe like an end of the roster big leaguer, but it can get you so much more in terms of value for years to come. You know, you keep these groups of guys together and maybe and add to them, you're going to find better players. You're going to evaluate your own players better. You're going to do all sorts of things that you can't just do if you tie one hand behind your back and just do analytics or video. Or, and it's the same way if you would have gone into a front office and said, you know what, I'm going to keep my 10, 12 pro scouts and scrap analytics and video and biomechanists and all that stuff. You're tying hands behind your back again. At this point, I'm talking about so many hands, you're an octopus. But
I would say the way I would put all of this is,
keep all the arrows in your quiver, man.
And that's something the Giants are working to do here. And that's notable. And that actually is a perfect segue to another guy we want to talk about, who in the international, like, again, understandably, Roki Sasaki kind of stole all the headlines January 15th there. You know, like, the international signing date came and everyone kind of waited to see where Roki Sasaki and the announcement going to the Dodgers. But there's also everything that happens normally in an international signing period. And I would say that what the Giants did is one of the moves that has a chance to make a big impact in the long term, because Joshua Gonzalez wasn't the highest bonus in the international class. But if you said who was the best player, you know, non-Sasaki division, you could make an argument for him. He was someone who leaps into this Giants top 10. And I would say, already when you talk about who you're looking forward to hopefully seeing in the DSL this year, he's got to be a name to watch, is he not?
Yes, you stole my thunder here. I was going to say, like, I've spent the last few nights trying to make reasonably priced flight plans to the Dominican, and he would be on my hit list to go see. Hopefully he's in the All-Star game. But he would be high on my list because you said it. He's in the conversation for best non-Sasaki player in the class. And he jumped into their top 10 pretty easily because the system isn't flush with hitters at this point and will not be flush with hitters, like I said, in about a month's time in the big leagues, assuming everybody gets their at-bats in the big leagues. But he's a guy who could be an offensive-minded shortstop and have a lot of really – and switch-hitting offensive-minded shortstop with a lot of skills. Obviously, it's remains to be seen if he lives up to that report. But, you know, Ben Badler does, I think, the best job in the country at tracking these. Well, they're isn't employed by a club. But in the public sector, you should go get your information from Ben Badler. And he has him in the conversation for most talented guy, even if it wasn't the highest bonus. So yeah, he'll be a very high priority for me and the new slow-mo camera to go take a look at here in 5 months or so.
So, and again, the thing of him is you are talking about a switch hitter with tools to go with skills too. Like, guy can really run. There's an above average arm, could be an above average defender. Like, there's a lot of different ways that he could be impactful. It's going to be interesting to see. But the thing that does jump out here is I do want to hit on a couple of guys. We like to always kind of talk about non-top 10 prospects to pop. Before we get to that, though, I want to bring up a non-top 10 prospect who kind of, we're just hoping to be healthy. I got to be honest. Like, Reggie Crawford was a, you know, the best way I can put it is that he was known in the 2022 draft as like, wow, there's a lot of talent here. But unfortunately, it was also like he was a two-way guy, but really a pitcher. And it was that pitching track record was probably as small as anyone that we've ever seen taken in the first round.
Right. I think the number is 8 innings pitched collegiately, might be 6. And that doesn't count his 1 or 2 appearances for the college national team. Like, when we were doing draft conversation there, it was like, I've seen him pitch. I don't do draft coverage. I feel like I've seen Sasquatch because I saw him pitch at the college national team. Oh, left-hander in the mid-90s with a dastardly slider? That'll play. And I got to see him again in spring training last year. It was an inter-squad game, and I was the only non-Giants personnel there, which was kind of interesting. And it's sad because he could have pitched in the big leagues that day.
But that means that you've probably seen him about as much as almost anyone not, you know, employed by the Giants or Connecticut, because we are talking about a pitcher who has added all up, summer, college leagues, college, pro baseball. He's at 53 2/3 innings since 2020.
I saw him twice in the spring. Like, that's kind of amazing. But that first was like, oh, it's 97-100 from the left side with some bite to it, a slider that'll take your soul, and a changeup that's pretty good too. This is fantastic. I wrote a thing that, you know, you need to be patient with him, but it might be worth it. I kind of compared it to the career trajectory of Garrett Crochet, because he didn't get to pitch a whole heck of a lot in college either because of injuries and the pandemic, yada, yada, yada. And now Garrett Crochet is Garrett Crochet. Well, that story, unfortunately, has aged like milk. But the moral of the story remains the same. There's just going to need to be more patience. Like, if he emerges,
a lot more patience because he's not going to pitch in 25.
The shoulder surgery. He's going to put him out for a while, and that's scarier than Tommy John surgery. And he's had all of these. He's had Tommy John. He's had, I think it was oblique. I think he's had mono, hamstring stuff. And he doesn't have a lot of pitching experience because he had some hitting time, but he needs to get on the mound, man. If he emerges from that surgery with the stuff intact, then he'll get there.
And the concern is, like, the thing that's going to be tough is that, again, he's going to miss 25. And this is not close, understandably, this is not close to a finished product yet. The stuff, when he's healthy, has been really good. His strike throwing's really got to improve because he's barely been on the mound. Right. Like, this is someone who there are high school pitchers who will get drafted this year who probably have more actual, like, competitive innings on their, you know, in their background than Crawford does. Because again, he was also, we don't want to undersell this. When we say a two-way player, this was a hitter who got on the mound and really showed some stuff, but it was not until pretty late in his college career that he kind of embraced, oh, I'm going to be a pitcher. Yeah. I mean, he even hit in the fall league. Like, this is a guy who, you know, in 23, it was still like he was a two-way player in some ways.
He didn't hit in the fall league. He got in the batter's box in the fall league.
He stood in the batter's box. That was probably the final, like, red, Reggie, you're a pitcher, right? Like, you realize now that you're a pitcher. I think he hit under $140 that, you know, in the fall league that year.
I mean, I don't want to pile on because, again, one of the nicest people I've ever met, but his batting line in the fall league was worse than Tim Tebow's.
He's a pitcher. So that's the good news is that he's a pitcher. You just want to see him get healthy. And that's one that, you know, like, if you're wondering, well, why, you know, where is Reggie Crawford? Shoulder surgery, you hope to see him back on the mound in 26. But Josh, before we wrap this up, who's someone outside of the top 10 who is going to play, hopefully, in 2025 and is someone that fans should keep an eye on?
I would go with Josh Bostic, the right-hander who they took out of Grayson College in 2023. Big-time fastball with a lot of IVB on it. Got to work to separate the breaking balls a little bit. Got some good drop on a changeup, but he's got to throw the changeup a little more arm speed to get it to mirror his fastball's arm speed. But there's a lot of raw ingredients there, and he struck out 121 hitters in 107 innings at low A last year. So he's going to go to – I assume he's going to have a fun time in Eugene to start the year because pitchers can kind of dominate that league because it's going to be very, very cold in April. Once the summer gets going, it'll be less fun. But he should be one to watch, and he was one that kind of flew under the radar a bit during the regular season. Let's see if I can find any more fun names.
I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give one myself, which is, again, I'm cheating a little bit. He's number 11, but Johnny Level. Great, really good year in the DSL. Switch hitting, shortstop, real, you know, impressive power for his age. Should be coming to the U.S. in 2025. And that's a guy just to kind of follow away. Like, let's see what he does, you know, this year, probably in the Arizona Complex League. But everything that we saw, it seemed like last year was encouraging for where he's going.
Yeah, he was high on the top 31 that I did for the DSL, and he should be one to the preseason ACL watch list if we're doing this like college football or college basketball. And if that were the case, there'd be like 200 guys on the list. But he'll be definitely one that I'm doing Florida and Arizona this year. He'll be one that I'm looking forward to seeing on the backfields in about a month from now. The way the schedule works out, a little inside baseball here, I like to do it at the end of the Arizona season where they double up. So I can go to wherever in the daytime. And then at night you get one of your choices is San Francisco and Milwaukee. They pair each other up and play each other constantly. And you can see them at night. So you can, if I'm there 7 days, 8 days, whatever it is, I can get roughly 16 games. And that's not even counting if I feel frisky and go to some high school stuff or college stuff. So the long way of saying I'm excited to see Johnny Level.
Johnny Level, another name to know. Again, there's great a lot name. More over at baseball. Great name too, but there's a lot more over at baseballamerica.com. We hope you're enjoying these deep dives. Again, we have a playlist of these. So if you have missed any of them, just go to the Baseball America channel, you know, on the YouTube. We have a playlist there of farm system deep dives, and you can catch up on any that you have missed. We also are doing prospect profiles on the number one prospect in each and every organization. So, you know, we're going to do a Bryce Eldridge that'll be coming up on there. So much more at the YouTube channel, on the podcast feed as well. We're putting all of this on there. And if you could like and subscribe and leave a review on your podcast provider, or if you're on YouTube, you know, make sure you click that bell also so you get notifications, because we're putting out a lot of content there and we don't want you to miss any of it. For Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's VANTA.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.